Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Jeremiah chapter 38, which I will entitle Jeremiah Cast into the Cistern. Our time frame is this. We're within the last 2 years of the kingdom of Judah. Babylon came in 586 and destroyed Judah. The siege started either 11 months before that or 30 months before that. It seems the scholars disagree, but we are now in the last days of Judah and Jerusalem. Our background from chapter 37 is this. Jeremiah had been arrested by the king's officials during the siege interlude, when the Babylonians had come to besiege Jerusalem and then left the siege in order to defend against the Egyptians who were coming up to help Zedekiah. And during that time, Jeremiah had gotten arrested. He was trying to go take possession of his land in Anathoth to the northeast of Jerusalem, and he was arrested there by a guy named Elijah, who said, "You are escaping from here to go over to the Babylonians." Jeremiah said, "Nope, that's not true." But nonetheless, Elijah took Jeremiah back to the royal officials who put Jeremiah in the prison of Jonathan the scribe. King Zedekiah goes to Jeremiah in this prison that used to be the house of Jonathan the scribe. It was probably somewhere in the royal complex, I speculate. And Jeremiah says, "I'm going to die in this place." And so Zedekiah, God bless his hard-hearted little soul, sends Jeremiah from Jonathan's prison to the courtyard of the guard, which is a prison, probably for state prison, in the king's palace, which was a little bit below the temple and close to the temple, connected by a walkway. So now Jeremiah is in the courtyard of the guard, and that's where we are now. So we begin Jeremiah 38, 1 through 5. Shephatiah, son of Mattan, Gedaliah, son of Pashur, Jehukal, son of Shelemiah, and Pashur, son of Malchijah, heard what Jeremiah was telling all the people when he said. Now from now on, I'm just going to abbreviate references to these four guys as the four officials. But let's briefly look at them. First of all, Shephatiah, he's not mentioned anywhere else in the Bible, John Gill says, and Ellicott says he appears to be a Levite. Who knows? Gedaliah, son of Pashur, is the second guy, the second official. He's not mentioned anywhere else, as John Gill points out. He is to be distinguished from Jeremiah's protector. In Jeremiah 45, we read this, "When Jeremiah had not yet turned to go, Nebuzaradan," that's Nebuchadnezzar's general, "said to Jeremiah, 'Return to Gedaliah, son of Ahikam, whom the king of Babylon has appointed over the cities of Judah.'" So Gedaliah was the governor after the fall of Jerusalem, but that's not the same Gedaliah here. And then we've got Jehukal. Well, first of all, Gedaliah is the son of Pashur. Now, there's two Pashurs mentioned in verse 1. Gedaliah is the son of a Pashur, and then one of the four officials is Pashur, son of Malchijah. The pulpit commentator says of these two Pashurs, they appear to be two of them mentioned here. One probably is the same who put Jeremiah in the stocks in Jeremiah 20, and the other is a member of the first of Zedekiah's two embassies to the prophet in Jeremiah 21. Well, I don't think so. I think the two Pashurs in Jeremiah 20 and 21 are exactly the same person. The pulpit doesn't manage to tell us which Pashur is which. Colin Delitch says that the first Pashur is the one who put Jeremiah in the stocks, Gedaliah, son of Pashur. So all of this is just mentioned by me to you to show that nobody knows who this Pashur is. It doesn't matter. Gedaliah, son of Pashur, we don't care who that Pashur is. And Pashur, son of Malchijah, the third official, we'll just call him Pashur. Now, Jehukal is mentioned. He's one of the four officials that hated Jeremiah. He's mentioned in Jeremiah 37, verse 3 in the previous chapter. "Nevertheless, King Zedekiah sent Jehukal, son of Shelemiah, and Zephaniah, son of Maaseiah, the priest." He's the Sagan, the second priest, Zephaniah. And Jehukal was an official, a messenger sent from King Zedekiah to Jeremiah, requesting, "Please pray for us." Now, I mentioned that Pashur, one of the four officials, was probably the same one that's mentioned in Jeremiah 20 as the Pashur who put Jeremiah in the stocks, and I take him to so be. Ellicott, Cambridge, and Pulpit agree with that. We read in Jeremiah 20, verses 1 through 4, "Pashur the priest, the son of Immer, and chief official in the temple of the Lord, heard Jeremiah prophesying these things. So Pashur had Jeremiah the prophet beaten and put him in the stocks at the upper Benjamin gate in the Lord's temple. The next day, when Pashur released Jeremiah from the stocks, Jeremiah said to him, 'The Lord does not call you Pashur, but Magor Missabib,'" which means terror on every side when it's translated. For this is what the Lord says, Jeremiah says, I'm about to make you a terror to both yourself and those you love. They will fall by the sword of their enemies before your very eyes. I will hand Judah over to the king of Babylon, and he will deport them to Babylon and put them to the sword. So if this is the same Pasha, and I believe that it was, we can see that Pasha is an enemy of Jeremiah, as all of these four guys are. They're going to put him into a cistern in order to kill him. Verse 2, Jeremiah 38, this is what the Lord says. Jeremiah says this, and now he's quoting Yahweh, whoever stays in this city will die by the sword, famine, or plague, but whoever goes over to the Babylonians will live. He will escape with his life. He will live. Now, of course, he'll be in exile, but he will live. And this is what the Lord says, continues Jeremiah, this city will certainly be handed over to the army of the king of Babylon, who will capture it. Then the official said to the king, this man should be put to death. He is discouraging the soldiers who are left in this city, as well as all the people, by the things he is saying to them. This man is not seeking the good of these people, but their ruin. Of course, the four officials had it all wrong. Jeremiah is trying to save their lives, but the morons in charge of the government did not believe Jeremiah. Verse 5, he is in your hands, King Zedekiah answered. The king can do nothing to oppose you. Well, Jeremiah is still prophesying the same old way, doom and gloom. Disaster's coming on Jerusalem, and you notice he did this despite receiving bread and a little bit of comfort from Zedekiah. Zedekiah having released him from the prison, which used to be Jonathan the scribe's house. Zedekiah also provided bread to be delivered to Jeremiah in the court of the guard, and so he had loosened up a little bit, but still Jeremiah knew that Zedekiah could kill him at any time. Nonetheless, he's brave enough to keep on prophesying the same old doom and gloom. Whoever stays in this city will die. And even if Zedekiah didn't kill him, the four royal officials would kill him. But he still kept on prophesying the same old way. Jeremiah was a gutsy individual. Now, in verse 5, Zedekiah says, the king can do nothing to oppose you four officials. How did he say that? Did he say it in a complaining way? Well, I can't do anything against you guys. You have so much power. And I'm weak here, so just go ahead and do it. Go ahead and kill Jeremiah. Or it could be that Zedekiah was speaking in a flattering way. Oh, the king can do nothing to oppose you because you're such great ministers. I don't think that's what it was. I think he was complaining. Go ahead. You got the power over me, and there's not a thing I can do to stop you. Not that he's happy about it, but he resigns himself to the inevitable. We go now to Jeremiah 38, verses 6 through 10. So they took Jeremiah, that's the four officials, and put him into the cistern of Malchijah, the king's son, who was in the courtyard of the guard. Now, this cistern was right there in that same courtyard of the guard, which had a prison. The guardhouse where guards lived had a courtyard in front of it, and there was a prison there so the guards could watch it, I guess. So the cistern belonged to some individual named Malchijah, who was called the king's son, but that's unlikely that the king's son would be owning a cistern. So the KJV has the son of Hamelech. It's not likely the king would have a son watching over a dungeon there in the king's courtyard. This is a translation issue. As Ellicott says, the Septuagint agrees with the marginal reading of the KJV in describing him as the son of the king. So the Septuagint and the KJV margin say he was the son of the king. So maybe he did. Maybe he was in charge of a cistern in a prison. But I find that hard to believe. In verse 6, the officials lowered Jeremiah by ropes into the cistern. Ropes were necessary, shows that the cistern was very, very deep. There was no way Jeremiah could climb out of the cistern. The cistern had no water in it, which means Jeremiah would die of thirst. It only had mud in it, and Jeremiah sank down into the mud. And so it was a very unpleasant, nasty place to be imprisoned. Josephus says that Jeremiah sank down in mud up to his neck. Of course, that sounds like an exaggeration. Some say that chapter 3 of Lamentations was composed while Jeremiah was in the cistern. Jeremiah, of course, wrote Lamentations, and he says in chapter 3, verse 55 of that book, I called on your name, Yahweh, from the depths of the pit. That's a reasonable assumption, I think. Verse 7, but Ebed-Melech, a Cushite, an official in the royal palace, heard that they had put Jeremiah into the cistern. Now, this Ebed-Melech was a royal official also. He was a Cushite, which means he was an Ethiopian. Ellicott says the use of Ethiopian or Cushite slaves in the king's household, probably as keeping guard over the harem, had been of some standing, perhaps even as early as the time of David, as in the case of the Cushite in 2 Samuel 18:21. So he was perhaps a harem official or a slave working for Zedekiah. But at any rate, he was friendly to Jeremiah. He heard that the officials had put Jeremiah in the cistern while the king, this is verse 7, while the king was sitting in the Benjamin gate, Abed-Melech went out of the palace and said to him, "My lord the king, these men have acted wickedly in all that they have done to Jeremiah the prophet. They have thrown him into a cistern where he will starve to death when there is no longer any bread in the city." So the king was not in his royal palace anywhere near the court of the guard. He was at the Benjamin Gate, which was a gate in the northern wall of the city, called the Benjamin Gate because it opened up into the tribe of Benjamin. Why was he up there? Some speculations. Maybe he was hearing cases, legal cases. I doubt it. Another option, he wanted to have a view of the enemy's camp because the Babylonians, remember, came from the north of the city because the rest of the city was surrounded by valleys, but not the north. It was flat. Perhaps Zedekiah was at the Benjamin Gate to prevent desertions to the Babylonians because a lot of Jews, I'm sure now, are thinking, we need to get out of Dodge because bad things are about to happen. Maybe they're starting to believe Jeremiah. Ellicott says this, the Benjamin Gate was on the northern wall of the city, the most exposed to the attack of the invading army, and the king apparently had gone there either to direct the operations of the defense or perhaps to prevent others from following, as they might think, Jeremiah's example, and either deserting to the enemy or abandoning the defense of the city. So we see now things are getting desperate for Zedekiah. He's very close to being captured and killed as the pincers of the Babylonian army start to close in. This Abed-Melech, who went to Zedekiah to get Jeremiah out of the cistern, his name means servant of the king. And then this man was a pretty brave man to denounce the four high officials, the same officials that Zedekiah would do nothing to stop when Jeremiah was thrown into the cistern. Some people point that out about Zedekiah. But in Zedekiah's defense, you can say this, he might not have been there when Jeremiah was thrown into the cistern. He might have been up at the Benjamin Gate, and the officials could have done it behind his back. And to his credit, Zedekiah did release Jeremiah from the cistern when he discovered Jeremiah was there through the news given to him by Abed-Melech. So Zedekiah seems to be a little bit afraid of Jeremiah, that perhaps Jeremiah is correct. He doesn't want to kill him outright like his four officials do. And in verse 10, we read, "Then the king," that's Zedekiah, "commanded Abed-Melech the Cushite, take 30 men from here with you and lift Jeremiah the prophet out of the cistern before he dies." So we see here that Zedekiah has repented of his earlier actions against Jeremiah, not listening to him, not releasing him from the prison in the courtyard of the guard, which he could have done, but he didn't do it. He might not have known about Jeremiah in the cistern. But at any rate, he's repented of his former attitude somewhat, and he commands Abed-Melech, take 30 men from here and get Jeremiah out of the cistern. Now, why 30 men? That's a lot of men. Here's some options as to why so many. The dungeon was very deep, and Jeremiah was an old man. It would take 30 men to haul him out. I don't think that's true at all. It didn't take 30 men to drop him down into the cistern. It's not going to take 30 men to get him out. It could be that the men of the city were so weakened by the famine brought on by the siege that it would require 30 weak men to get Jeremiah out of the cistern. Well, I think the real reason is that Zedekiah wanted to send 30 men to guard against men who might be sent by the four officials who might try to stop the rescue. So Zedekiah tells Abed-Melech, get Jeremiah out, lift Jeremiah the prophet out. Zedekiah calls Jeremiah a prophet, which is ironic since he hasn't listened to a word Jeremiah's been saying over the years of his reign. Zedekiah, by the way, ruled from 597 to 586 for 11 years, and all through his reign, Jeremiah periodically gave prophecies. The city's going to burn. We go now to Jeremiah 38, verses 11 through 13. So Abed-Melech took the men with him, the 30 men, and went to a room under the treasury in the palace. He took some old rags and worn-out clothes from there and let them down with ropes to Jeremiah in the cistern. Abed-Melech the Cushite said to Jeremiah, put these old rags and worn-out clothes under your arms to pad the ropes. Jeremiah did so. And they, that's the 30 men, pulled him up with the ropes and lifted him out of the cistern. And Jeremiah remained in the courtyard of the guard. Remember, the cistern is in the courtyard of the guard nearby, and so basically Jeremiah went from a cistern back to prison. Now, where these rags were stored, Abed-Melech got them out of a room that was under the treasury. John Gill says that room could mean the treasury of garments where the royal wardrobe was kept. John Gill also says that these worn-out garments were probably kept for rags in a cellar underneath the room of the royal wardrobe. Nobody really knows. It doesn't really matter. He got the rags and dropped them down in the pit because the ropes would have hurt Jeremiah's underarms by pulling him up. That was pretty thoughtful of Abed-Melech. So Jeremiah gets pulled up and he remains in the courtyard of the guard. Abed-Melech was not told by Zedekiah that he could set Jeremiah completely free, and so Abed-Melech merely changed the location of his imprisonment from a bad place, the cistern, to a less bad place, the courtyard of the guard. Now, you might ask, why did Abed-Melech not go ahead and ask Zedekiah, King Zedekiah, why don't we just let Jeremiah completely go free? Well, that might have been to ask too much, because that might have really exasperated the four officials who hated Jeremiah. And besides, there was no better place to be there anyway than the courtyard of the guard, because remember in our last chapter, Zedekiah had ordered bread, as long as it lasted, to be given to Jeremiah every day, bread from the baker street. So the courtyard of the guard is not too bad of a place to be. We move down to Jeremiah 38, verses 14 through 16. Then King Zedekiah sent for Jeremiah the prophet and had him brought to the third entrance to the temple of the Lord. I am going to ask you something, the king said to Jeremiah. Do not hide anything from me. Jeremiah said to Zedekiah, if I give you an answer, will you not kill me? Even if I did give you counsel, you would not listen to me. But King Zedekiah swore this oath secretly to Jeremiah. As surely as the Lord lives, who has given us breath, I will neither kill you nor hand you over to those who are seeking your life, referring, of course, to those four officials. Now Zedekiah got Jeremiah out of the courtyard of the guard, had him brought to the third entrance to the temple of the Lord. And nobody knows what the third entrance is. Let me give you some of the best scholarly speculation. It was a place through which people went from the king's house to the house of the Lord. John Gill says this is no doubt the same place that is called the King's Ascent, because you had to go up from the palace up to the Temple Mount, because the temple was at the highest place in Jerusalem. Now, on this ascent, this ramp, covered walkway, whatever it was, there were three gates or entrances. The famous Dr. Lightfoot says this. He says the first was the gate of the foundation, the second was the gate behind the guard, and the third the gate Coponius. So whatever that is, I don't know. But I picture the covered walkway going up, and as you walk up the walkway to get inside, under the covered part of it, you had to go through a gate. I don't know. I have no idea. But this was the same gate, apparently, that Solomon went up to show the temple to the Queen of Sheba. Pulpit commentator says, what this means exactly is not clear. Probably the entry led from the palace to the temple. It must have been a private place, else it would not have been chosen for this interview. So that's all we need to know. Connects the palace to the temple, and it was private. So the king, in verse 14, says, I'm going to ask you something, Jeremiah. And then Zedekiah loved to ask Jeremiah for prophecies. He never paid Jeremiah a bit of attention once the prophecy was given, but he loved to ask for prophecies. It's a strange relationship between Zedekiah and Jeremiah. Don't hide anything from me, the king says. Well, Jeremiah hasn't hidden anything from Zedekiah for the last 11 years of his reign. He hasn't hidden anything. Why does he think he's going to hide something now? Why does he think Jeremiah's going to give him some sweet words of consolation that might be false? Verse 15, Jeremiah said to Zedekiah, if I give you an answer, will you not kill me? In other words, Jeremiah knows he's going to say the same thing, destruction on Jerusalem. You're going to get taken to Babylon. And Jeremiah knows that if he says that, Zedekiah is probably going to kill him. And so Jeremiah might here be thinking, maybe I'm going to keep quiet this time, because what's the point? I'm not going to cast my pearls before this swine. And Jeremiah says in verse 15, even if I did give you counsel, you would not listen to me. And that's a reasonable assumption. Jeremiah was well aware of Zedekiah's aversion to the truth. Verse 16, but King Zedekiah swore this oath secretly to Jeremiah. Why was Zedekiah trying to keep his powwow with Jeremiah secret? Couple of speculations. Option number one, it was dishonorable for a king to make an oath with his subject. That is a little demeaning for a king to do that. But most probably the reason that Zedekiah wanted his conversation with Jeremiah and the oath that, not to kill Jeremiah, secret, was because Zedekiah was afraid of the four top officials of his reign who hated Jeremiah and who would not be happy to find out the king had promised not to kill Jeremiah when they wanted to kill Jeremiah. So Zedekiah makes the oath, as surely as the Lord lives. That's the standard oath for Jews back then. It's all through the Old Testament, as surely as the Lord lives, because he does. God lives, so that it's certain. It's certain that the Lord lives, and it's certain, Jeremiah, I'm not going to kill you. And he adds to the oath, as surely as the Lord lives, who is giving, and he adds to the oath, as surely as the Lord lives, who has given us breath. That addition there, who has given us breath, is relevant to the oath. In other words, Zedekiah will not take away the breath of life from Jeremiah. God gives us breath, and I'm not going to take it away from you, Jeremiah. Nor am I going to hand you over to those who will kill you, namely the four officials. We go down to verses 17 through 22 of Jeremiah 38. Then Jeremiah said to Zedekiah, "This is what the Lord God Almighty, the God of Israel, says. If you surrender to the officers of the king of Babylon, your life will be spared and the city will not be burned down. You and your family will live. But if you will not surrender to the officers of the king of Babylon, this city will be handed over to the Babylonians and they will burn it down. You yourself will not escape from their hands." King Zedekiah said to Jeremiah, "I am afraid of the Jews who have gone over to the Babylonians, for the Babylonians may hand me over to them and they will mistreat me." "They will not hand you over," Jeremiah replied. "Obey the Lord by doing what I tell you. Then it will go well with you and your life will be spared. But if you refuse to surrender, this is what the Lord has revealed to me. All the women left in the palace of the king of Judah will be brought out to the officials of the king of Babylon. Those women will say to you, 'They misled you and overcame you, those trusted friends of yours. Your feet are sunk in the mud. Your friends have deserted you.'" Now in verse 17, when Jeremiah gives this last prophecy to Zedekiah, he says, "This is what the Lord God Almighty says." Notice that Jeremiah always prefaced his prophecies as coming from God, not from Jeremiah. Jeremiah says, "Zedekiah, if you surrender to the officers of the king of Babylon," why not to the king of Babylon personally? Because Nebuchadnezzar was not now at Jerusalem. He was up north in Hamath, Syria, north of Israel at a place called Riblah. We read that in the next chapter, chapter 39, verse 5. "However, the Chaldean army pursued them and overtook Zedekiah in the plains of Jericho, arrested him, and brought him to Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon's king, at Riblah in the land of Hamath. The king passed sentence on him there." And so Jeremiah must have known that Nebuchadnezzar was not around. He says, "You surrendered to the officers of the king, the military officers, and you will be spared, Zedekiah, and your family will be spared too." Verse 18, "But if you don't surrender, the city will be burnt down, and you will not escape." Verse 19, Zedekiah just cannot face the fact of surrendering. So he starts giving excuses to Jeremiah. "I'm afraid of the Jews who have gone over to the Babylonians. If I surrender to the Babylonians, these treacherous Jews who have surrendered to the Babylonians, they may mistreat me." Well, mistreat could mean these quisling Jews might mock him or maybe even kill him. Now, one of my commentators says that Nebuchadnezzar would never let Zedekiah's political opponents come near the king, and so Zedekiah was afraid of a shadow. He was weak-kneed. He was unduly afraid. He didn't need to be afraid of people mocking him. Well, I don't know why Nebuchadnezzar would never let Zedekiah's political opponents come near him, so I think it might have been a reasonable fear on Zedekiah's part that he would be mocked. But still, what's worse, to be mocked or to be killed? But Zedekiah might have been thinking that the people would actually kill him, the quisling Jews who are going over to the Babylonians. Now, some commentators have said, or at least one commentator has said, that Zedekiah was unduly fearful of being killed by his disaffected Jerusalemites, because no subject of a king would commit regicide, even if the Babylonians had allowed them the opportunity to do that, and that would never happen. And that might be true. The Babylonians would probably want to execute Zedekiah themselves, not allow a mob to do it. However, if the Babylonians weren't around and they're still in the city and the city's about to fall and people are very desperate because the siege is going down and they want to blame the king for it, they might have killed him. That's just my speculation. I don't know. So we can speculate whether Zedekiah was unduly afraid of the Jews or whether he had legitimate fear of the Jews who would have gone over to the Babylonians. Jeremiah doesn't say, oh, come on, Zedekiah, you're worried about nothing. What he does say in verse 20, they will not hand you over. They being the quisling Jews will not hand you over, Jeremiah replied. Obey the Lord by doing what I tell you. He didn't say obey me, Jeremiah. He said obey the Lord. He's speaking in the name of the Lord here. He's a prophet. If you do that, Zedekiah, it will go well with you. Your life will be spared. But if you refuse, all the women left in the palace will be brought out to the officials of the king of Babylon. In other words, they would be escorted out of the city to the military camp where the officials of Nebuchadnezzar were. Nebuchadnezzar, of course, is north at Riblah and Hamath, but the army officials would bring out the women of the palace. And then as the women go out, they say, hey, Zedekiah, the women are mocking their king. Where are they? They misled you, those trusted friends of yours. Now, those trusted friends would be all the false prophets who constantly said, peace, peace. And Jeremiah said, there is no peace. And also all the officials who said, let's fight the Babylonians. We can take them. But the women will mock. And that's kind of demeaning for a king to be mocked by the women of his reign. The women will say, your feet are sunk in the mud. And worse than that, Zedekiah, you're about to get blinded and carried off into captivity. Your friends have deserted you. As the wonderful country singer John Anderson once said in one of my favorite country songs, nobody loves you when you're down. Can you catch a falling star? Jeremiah 38, verses 23 through 28. We'll continue. Jeremiah continues, all your wives and children will be brought out to the Babylonians. You yourself will not escape from their hands, but will be captured by the king of Babylon, and this city will be burned down. Then Zedekiah said to Jeremiah, do not let anyone know about this conversation, or you may die. Well, let's stop right here in verse 23. All your wives and children will be brought out to the Babylonians. That actually happened. And in fact, his sons in particular were brought out to the Babylonians for execution by the king Nebuchadnezzar. We read that in the next chapter, Jeremiah 39, verse 6. At Riblah, the king of Babylon slaughtered Zedekiah's sons before Zedekiah's eyes. And it was probably only his sons, not his daughters, as John Gill says. So the wives and children, of course, were taken out to be taken off into exile. The sons of Zedekiah were killed because they would be heirs to the throne, and the Babylonians didn't want any trouble on that score. The Babylonians are going to put Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, as governor of the region. They don't want anybody stirring up political trouble by claiming, I'm a son of the king, Zedekiah. So they were all killed. Jeremiah says in verse 23, you yourself will not escape from their hands, but will be captured. That's right. He was captured, blinded and captured, in fact, and taken off to Babylon, as we read in the next chapter. Now it says in verse 23 that Zedekiah will be captured by the king of Babylon. That's not directly captured, not personally captured, because as I've said several times, Nebuchadnezzar was not personally present when Zedekiah was captured. Let me read that again in verse 5, chapter 39, the next chapter. However, the Chaldean army pursued them and overtook Zedekiah, arrested him, brought him to Nebuchadnezzar. So in other words, Zedekiah was captured by the Babylonian army, which was under the king of Babylon. So that's not a problem. Verse 23 is not a problem when it says that Zedekiah was captured by the king of Babylon. The king of Babylon was in charge of the army that actually did capture Zedekiah. Now in verse 24, we read, then Zedekiah said to Jeremiah, do not let anyone know about this conversation or you may die. Now this shows that Zedekiah has no intention of going along with Jeremiah's prophecy, because if he had agreed with the prophecy, he would have gone out and told all the people of Jerusalem, we've got to surrender. But Zedekiah didn't want Jeremiah's advice to surrender to be known. So he says, be quiet. So it shows that Zedekiah had no intention of listening to Jeremiah. He said, in fact, Jeremiah, if you tell anybody about this, you may die. Now, what did he mean by that? You may die. Well, that could be a hint by Zedekiah that Zedekiah's oath to protect Jeremiah might be canceled if Jeremiah talked. Remember, Zedekiah had promised, as I live and as there's breath in my body, or whatever he said, I'm not going to kill you. He could be hinting that he would kill Jeremiah, but I think most probably he's saying, look, if you let anybody know about this, the officials hear that you're preaching surrender and prophesying destruction, if those four officials hear about that, they're going to kill you. I think that's what Zedekiah's getting at there. Now, why did Zedekiah desire secrecy? Why would he care if Jeremiah got killed? Well, option number one, Zedekiah could have desired secrecy in order to protect his honor. If the officials thought the king was listening to Jeremiah, if the officials thought that the king was listening to Jeremiah's advice to surrender, that would have made him look weak, like a coward, and the officials would not have liked that. So Zedekiah was probably trying to protect his honor in the eyes of his four officials. Another option is that Zedekiah was protecting Jeremiah's safety, not his own honor. In other words, Zedekiah knows that the four officials are going to kill Jeremiah as soon as they get wind of what he had just said, and so Zedekiah is trying to protect Jeremiah, or at least pretending to protect Jeremiah, to protect his own honor. So in other words, there might have been some mixed motives there. Maybe he wanted to protect Jeremiah, but I think most probably Zedekiah, being who he was, he wanted to protect his own reputation. And so he told Jeremiah, be quiet. Don't let anybody know about this surrender talk that you're giving me. Verse 25, if the officials hear, Zedekiah says, that I, Zedekiah, talked with you, Jeremiah, and they come to you and say, tell us what you said to the king and what the king said to you. In other words, if these officials come to Jeremiah and say, tell us, Jeremiah, what you said to the king Zedekiah and what Zedekiah said back to you, do not hide it from us or we will kill you. Zedekiah then says in verse 26, then tell them, I was pleading with the king not to send me back to Jonathan's house to die there. Now, Jonathan's house, of course, is where there was a prison where the four officials had put Jeremiah and from which Zedekiah had released Jeremiah into the courtyard of the guard because there was no food in Jonathan's house prison. And so Zedekiah says, look, it's easy. You can cover up all your talk of surrender just by saying when the four officials come to talk to you, just say, oh, I was just asking King Zedekiah to keep me here in the courtyard of the guard. Don't send me back to that old prison in Jonathan's house. Verse 27, all the officials did come to Jeremiah and question him, and Jeremiah told them everything the king had ordered him to say. Well, now we've got a problem. Jeremiah has involved himself in a lie. At least it is alleged so. Well, there's a solution to that problem. Jeremiah had already entreated King Zedekiah the same thing in the previous chapter, chapter 37, verse 20. So now please listen, my lord the king. May my petition come before you. Don't send me back to the house of Jonathan the scribe, or I will die there. And so no doubt he renewed his request upon Zedekiah's suggestion. In other words, when Zedekiah says, you just tell him that you were asking not to be sent back to Jonathan's house, and Jonathan and Jeremiah, in order to make it true, just said, yes, well, please, king, don't send me back to Jonathan's house to die. In which case, Jeremiah would be speaking the truth. Now, he didn't tell them the whole truth, but of course, you're not morally obligated to tell somebody the truth. When somebody asks you something, you tell them the truth, but you don't have to tell them everything. And Jeremiah didn't tell them everything, which, of course, probably saved his life. Might have saved Zedekiah's life, too. And so the official said no more to Jeremiah, for no one had heard his conversation with the king. And Jeremiah remained in the courtyard of the guard until the day Jerusalem was captured. So the four hostile officials never mustered up enough courage or political support or the support of the king in order to kill Jeremiah, and so he survived his terrible circumstances. Now, how long he stayed in the courtyard of the guard in the prison there until 586 in August when Jerusalem went down is not known, but this whole last two chapters happened within maybe 2.5 years, assuming a 30-month siege from Babylon, so it wasn't like it was terribly long. And so we leave this chapter now, chapter 38, with Jeremiah in prison, and we are now prepared to go to chapter 39, which will tell us of the fall of Jerusalem, one of the most traumatic, tragic, and dramatic events in the history of Israel. And so I hope you stay tuned for our next audio in which we will discuss that disaster. And I hope you enjoyed this audio.